Hello and welcome back to our final episode of the preseason. I am one of your hosts of the Jag Bros, JT Raymond, alongside my two brothers, Jack and Joey. We saw the Jaguars finish the preseason 3-0 last Saturday night with a win at home against the Dolphins. Boys, can you believe that we're 3-0 in the month of August?
Jaguars are undefeated. So this is actually the second time in franchise history we've done that. We also were undefeated 4-0 in the preseason of 1997, where we went on to be 11-5. So hopefully good signs ahead for the Jags.
I wasn't very surprised. If you just watched us play, it was pretty evident that we were going to be undefeated. Our backups have been playing almost like starters. We look really good. I can't wait for this regular season.
We've got a great episode here prepared for you guys. We will start by talking about a game that Joey's got for us where we're going to be ranking some players and some things. Next, we'll dive into that preseason win against the Dolphins. What went well? What could we improve on? And then we're also going to react to the 53-man roster cuts that happened yesterday. Some surprises as well as some interesting moves the Jaguars made yesterday. And then finally, we're going to take a quick look at what's coming next for the podcast over the next couple weeks. And so with that, Joey, I'll turn it over to you. Walk us through what the parameters of this game look like, because Jack and I are ready to play.
Sounds good. Thank you, JT. Yes, I have three things that I'll have y'all rank. We'll definitely get to two. If we have time, we'll get to all three. I'm going to start it off. The Jaguars have had a tough time finding a quarterback. Thank God that we finally have Trevor Lawrence, and I don't think we'll ever have to worry about that for a long time. But right now, I'm going to have you rank these five Jaguars quarterbacks, starting from David Garrard, Brian Leftwich, Blake Bortles, Blaine Gabbert, Gardner Minshew. One being the best, five being the worst.
Ooh, this is a tough one. I think it's tough because a lot of these guys have somewhat similar talent levels, but also because obviously a few of these guys were much later round picks, such as Garrard and Minshew. And so obviously shot way past expectations, where Bortles, Gabbert, and who am I forgetting?
Leftwich
were obviously higher picks. And so a little bit more, well, not a little bit, a lot more disappointing. And so I'm going to go ahead and go a surprise pick here and go Garrard first. And then I will go with Bortles second. And then give me Minshew third, Leftwich fourth, and Gabbert fifth.
All righty. Good rankings, JT.
Yeah, I actually agree with a lot of your rankings and your thought process there, Jack. I don't think it's a surprise at all. I mean, David Garrard, outside of Brunell and Trevor, is clearly, I think, the best quarterback that we've ever had. Took us to the playoffs multiple times, had some great seasons with the Jags. And while we were meddling around 500, we were at least competitive with some of the really good teams. So I would certainly put him number one. Bortles is tough because he certainly flashed at times. You could say, I mean, from a production standpoint, it's clearly Bortles is number two. You could say, well, because the draft capital, you could try to bump Minshew up, or the potential Minshew maybe up. But I think you have to put Minshew at three or four, Leftwich followed by finally, Blaine Gabbert is in the cellar. The fact that we drafted him so high, the fact that we traded up to get him, and then we stuck with him for what I felt like was far too long, was extremely frustrating, and maybe the lowest of lows in a decade that had a lot of lows for Jaguars football.
Speaking of Bortles, too, I don't know if you guys saw this. This is just random, crazy, fun fact, but apparently Bortles, and there's an article out about Bortles right now this week that said that he's a little bit bored with retirement. So just took a job in construction. And so an everyday man. And so cheering for you, Bortles, from the sideline. But just kind of a weird but interesting story on him.
That's why people loved him at Jacksonville, and they called him the boat. And I don't think you were such a surprise pick, Jack, because I also have David Garrard as my number one. But my surprise one for number two, I got to go with Gardner Minshew and Minshew Mania. wasn't expecting much from him, and then all of a sudden he came out of nowhere and performed actually really well. He's still backing up a lot of people and starting some games. I got to go with Gardner Minshew as second. Third, I got to go with Leftwich. He didn't live up to the hype that he had, but I didn't think he played too terribly. I liked that he was able to run, and he also had a cannon of an arm. And that's why for fourth, I put Blake Bortles, because his arm strength was so weak. I mean, I was so tired of seeing 10-yard passes, screens. The man could not throw the ball down the field. And then, obviously, last place, Blaine Gabbert. I mean, just straight trash.
Blake Bortles at four is almost a travesty. I mean, we were 5 minutes away from going to the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles, and he had arguably his best game in his career the week before against Pittsburgh, where we scored almost 40, or sorry, over 40 points, and then followed up with a pretty good performance in New England. So I don't think you're going to see Byron Leftwich do that or Gardner Minshew do that. So I hear what you're saying, and certainly there's an argument to be made that Minshew could be higher, but strongly disagree with having Bortles that low.
I mean, the reason I put Bortles that low, and yes, he had flashes and he had a few good games. I mean, the Steelers game, I've never seen him play that well. But it's, the defense always put him on the other teams like red zone, because we do so many picks, so many sacks. He had really good field position. If we were at our own 20 and he had to drive the field, he could never score because he can't throw the ball further than 10 yards. But that's just my take. We'll move on to the next question. Now that we also have a world-renowned coach in Doug Peterson, and we don't ever really have to worry about that for a while, I want to rank some of these Jaguar head coaches that we had to suffer through. Our four this time, we have Jack Del Rio, Gus Bradley, Mike Mularkey, and Doug Marrone.
That's easy. I mean, Jack Del Rio is easily number one on that list. He's been a head coach multiple places, and he kept this Jaguars team relevant for pretty much his entire career. To Doug Marrone, simply by the fact that he took us to the playoffs, and while he was never a top-tier coach, he certainly had some okay seasons with Jacksonville. Mularkey, I always felt like he got a little bit of a bad shake here in Jacksonville, so I put him third. And then Gus Bradley is easily fourth. I think some of the statistics, he was one of the losingest coaches in the history of the game. I can remember there's a couple of seasons where I think the Jaguars at home under Gus Bradley averaged losing each game by somewhere between 14 to 17 points. It was absurd how bad those teams were. So I think Gus Bradley was certainly in the dweller.
Yikes, that's bad. Those are definitely some rough years. I would agree. Yeah, I don't have much to add on there. JT definitely put Jack Del Rio first and would keep the same order as well. Obviously, we wanted a little bit more from Del Rio, but a longtime Jaguars head coach, there was a reputation of getting stuck at 8-8. But hey, you know, after that, as you pointed out, several of those guys had significantly worse teams. So would rather be 8-8 competing for the division, competing for a playoff spot than some of those other years for the Jaguars.
I agree with you with the Jack Del Rio, but I actually have a little bit of a differing opinion. I have Mike Mularkey as number two. He only had one season. I didn't feel like he got a fair shake. And the reason I also have him at number two is he finally got rid of Gene Smith. He was the worst GM that I'd ever seen. He threw away draft picks. I mean, the amount of times that I would come from the draft with my heads in my hand, I was like, who did we just draft? We just passed on all these really good players for some no-name guy? Like, ugh, I just was so happy when he got rid of him. And then I would go with Gus Bradley and Doug Marrone last, only because I can never forgive Doug for letting that 2017 team collapse. It was on him to keep that team together. There was a lot of differing like attitudes and opinions, and he just couldn't manage the team. I think he was a good coach, but how can you go from a 2017 team who was seconds away from going to the Super Bowl to a just awful team where you lose everyone. I mean, I just can't forgive that collapse.
Joey, those rankings are absurd. There's no way that Gus Bradley or Mike Mularkey would have been seconds away from the Super Bowl, period. So how you have Doug Marrone because of the collapse of 2017, not to mention 2017 was more of a collapse because of Tom Coughlin's frustrations with the rest of the team and how they did. And Doug Marrone, I felt like, wasn't a strong enough personality to really stand in the way of the two. And so I think he was just more like collateral damage during that time. And oh, by the way, a coach can't fire the GM. So Mike Mularkey did not actually get rid of Gene Smith. Our owner did. And so I don't know why you would just rank him that high just out of that. So like there's no way you could have Doug Marrone at four on those lists, especially when Gus Bradley was truly the losingest coach of all time. Doug Marrone actually had a winning season and was, to your point, seconds away from the Super Bowl.
No. Maybe you're forgetting, but to hire Mike Mularkey, his thing was to get rid of Gene Smith. That is proven in the articles. Yes, Shad Khan is the one who fired him, but that was part of his negotiation to become the head coach. That's why I like Mike Mularkey. I don't feel like he got a fair shake. And you just said Doug Marrone had to speak up to be that head coach. He is the head coach. You can't let it collapse. I understand that technically, yes, he is a better coach than those other two. But because of the collapse, I cannot forgive it. I cannot forgive it. I was finally hyped. There were people at college who were telling me that it was okay to wear Jag stuff again. Like, I wasn't an embarrassment, and then it was an embarrassment all of a sudden next season.
Hey, Joey, did you remember what Mike Mularkey did in his one season in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I think he had two wins.
Yes, he was 2-14, the second last in the entire league. It wasn't like he was putting together this all-star team. It wasn't like you'd be wearing something proudly that you were a Jaguars fan at this time.
I understand. But I don't think he had a fair shake. I think he could have done better as years went by. They gave him 1 year. Like, college, NFL, you should get at least more than 1 year, unless you're as bad as Urban Meyer.
Well, he's gotten other years, two with Buffalo and three with Tennessee, and his all-time record is 36-53, so well under 500. So he had other chances. While we may have not given him the most fair chance, like, I still have no idea how you could have Doug Marrone below Mike Mularkey.
Yeah, I think, let me jump in here.
It's just a spite thing because he let it collapse.
Yeah, which I get, but I think at the end of the day, it's just an argument of what's the number one thing a head coach is graded off of. It's the win-loss record. Obviously, we all hate what happened to the 2017 team, but he also coached the best Jacksonville Jaguars team in the last 15 years. And so to me, a coach is graded off win-loss record. What do you do on the field? Does some of the off-the-field stuff matter? Of course. But give me a coach that gets us wins and we can figure out the rest. But yeah, Urban Meyer, glad you mentioned him because he doesn't even deserve to be ranked too.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I didn't even put him on the list, because normally we do five. There was no point to have Urban on there. He's going to go down as maybe the worst NFL coach of all time. So everyone would have had him at the bottom. Well, it looks like we ran out of time. The third question is not going to work out, so we'll move on to you, JT.
Awesome. Yeah, so let's dive into the preseason game three, the only game that Jaguars played at home. So the home audience got a chance to see us play, where the Jaguars won 31-18. And we started out, I think, the way we wanted to see, right? With two very good drives by the Jacksonville Jaguars offense. Trevor and the starters played for two series, where the first one ended in a fumble, unfortunately, inside the five by Tank Bigsby, followed by a touchdown by ETN. And the Jaguars defense also looked good by keeping the Dolphins only 3 points in the first quarter before we're turning it over to some of their backups as well. So, guys, what do you think of our team overall on Saturday night?
I thought they played really well, and I think Doug Peterson needs to do this more often. They were all playing for their position, and you could tell that, like, they were all running at 100%. They were all fighting for a position on this team, and they looked good. CJ Beathard finally looked like an actual backup. He played really well. He must have heard this podcast where I trashed him, because he definitely stepped up and played a lot better. Tank ran really well. He had that one mistake with the fumble, but I don't think that that's going to be an issue. He made the mistake. He ran even angrier afterwards. And that's what I like to see. I want to see an angry Tank, one that can push the pile to break tackles. I want to see Tank run angry more. I really like that. And then our wide receivers putting on performance. Seth Williams making really great catches. Calvin Ridley with toe drags.
That was an incredible catch. If you missed it, definitely go look it up. I thought for sure he only got 1 foot in. And then, of course, they play the replay in a pretty crazy first toe drag and then second foot down by Ridley. Yeah, I think you guys nailed it. You saw pretty much everything you wanted to see, especially from the starters. I think there's a few things, of course, you want to clean up and be ready for week one. But hey, I want to point this out too, guys. Just point out, hopefully I don't jinx us, but since the Jag Bros podcast has been rolling, the Jaguars have yet to lose. So we are undefeated. And so let's keep that win streak going. But yeah, the Jaguars, definitely the offense marched the ball down the field. Disappointing, but just, I think, a minor mistake from Tank fumbling on the one. Well, a major outcome. But if you watch the play, it was just a really solid play by the defender. And I actually kind of looked up because I was curious about Tank's college career, if this was any sort of concern, and really isn't. He's got strong ball security. And to your point, Joey, Tank must have been listening to the podcast too, because he ran hard. He had several broken tackles, and so that was great to see. And I love the way ETN was running too. And so both of our starting running backs looked strong. D'Ernest Johnson again with another strong performance. So the running attack looked great. The starting offensive unit was very, very strong.
Hot take here. The Jags' success is because of this podcast. So all you Jags fans can go ahead and thank us for pointing out everything and getting these players to play even better.
I love the optimism there. So speaking of optimism, let's focus on the offensive side of the ball first. There's a lot of things to be positive about before we look at the negatives. To your point, I thought ETN has looked amazing all preseason along. Eight attempts for 39 yards, including a touchdown inside the red zone, which was huge, an area where he struggled mightily in 2022. Also, Tim Jones with a nice 74-yard catch. Calvin Ridley looked really good for the couple of possessions that he was all out there for, three catches and 50 yards. Anybody else stand out to you guys from an offensive perspective who looked good?
Yeah, D'Ernest Johnson definitely stood out with another touchdown. He's really fighting to move up to that third position, and I think he has actually moved up to third string, kind of putting Hasty down to the fourth string. I mean, everyone still loves Hasty. He's got that quickness, and he may even be a possible extra return person. But D'Ernest Johnson is running hard. He's fighting, and I love to see the competition in this run room. Travis Etienne is obviously feeling Tank and D'Ernest Johnson on his back, so he's running hard. Tank wants to keep his second position running hard. It's just nice to see all these players playing at the top of their game to keep their spot.
Yeah, and Joey, you mentioned him earlier, but I think he deserves an extra shout out. CJ Beathard performed very well in that game against the Dolphins, 8 for 10, 134 yards, touchdown, moved a lot better in the pocket. That was something you had pointed out in previous episodes, Joey, that was maybe room for improvement. So looked significantly better. And so definitely helps us feel better about the backup QB position going into the regular season.
So there's not many negatives, I would say, from the Jaguars offensive standpoint, besides the Tank Bigsby fumble. Jack referenced it earlier in college. He was not known for fumbling. In fact, he had over 500 rushing attempts during his 3 years at Auburn, and he only had two fumbles. So he's averaging almost one out of every 250 carries. And so if this was the one here in preseason, great. That hopefully means he has no fumbles for the rest of the year, if we can extrapolate that. So not a big concern there. Anything else that stood out to you that might be a little bit of a concern on offense?
Yeah, something you've been highlighting a lot, JT, is red zone offense. I think it was, of course, as we've all said, significantly better. But there were a few times where we got stopped for a field goal. There's also the end of the first half drive where we could have potentially scored a field goal. It's hard to evaluate again in a preseason game when points aren't as significant. But again, I think something to watch is making sure our red zone, when we get there, is executing at a high level, getting the ball in the end zone. Again, he was quiet, but I really want to see in the regular season Ingram step up in the red zone. Only either three or four touchdowns last year. Would love to see him potentially double that this year.
Yeah, definitely want to see Ingram step up. I got him on my fantasy football, so a lot more touchdowns from you, Evan, please. And then my concern isn't something that you could really see on the field. It's more the depth at offensive line. There seems to be a lot of people getting dinged up and hurt a little bit. So I'm just kind of worried about our depth there. How well is everyone going to hold up? Hopefully we'll be really good, but that's my one concern for this offense right now.
Yeah, for me, not necessarily a concern, but something to monitor. When the Jaguars go two tight end sets with whether it's Farrell or Strange as the second tight end, Kirk is not usually on the field. And so if you're looking at Kirk as a potential fantasy asset, I would be a little bit cautious because I don't think he's going to be on the field quite as frequently. We know Doug Peterson likes to use two tight ends from his days in Philadelphia. We didn't necessarily have the personnel to do that last year. We've obviously made a huge investment in Kirk, so I know there's going to be plays drawn up for him, and he's certainly a difference maker at that slot position. But something to keep in mind, as well as Ingram, like the fact that at the end of the day, he did not have a target in this game. And while he can, I think, have some really, really high highs, I think this Jaguar offense is a lot of people, a lot of mouths to feed. And I think Calvin Ridley is the only one that I really see who's definitely going to get his in this time. And I think there's going to be a little bit of hit or miss for some of these other guys. So nothing necessarily a concern by how they played, but just thinking about it from a fantasy perspective or thinking about it from an expectations perspective, I don't know if Kirk is necessarily going to have the season that he had last year.
One thing I would say to what JT was saying on the Evan Ingram stuff is it seemed like a lot of starters didn't even kind of play that game if there was a lot of depth or young depth there that they wanted to see. And I think they know what Evan Ingram brings and they know what he does. So they really wanted to see Luke Farrell and Brenton Strange. And I think that was the reason why we haven't seen him that much during this preseason is we know what he's going to do. There's not much that we need to see from him, but we really do actually need to see what Luke Farrell and Brenton Strange can do.
Yeah, we did see Farrell lace it up with the first string a few times, which was an interesting combo. But I do think it's a good point, JT, especially as people are thinking about fantasy football. I'm sure a lot of y'all have just done your draft or about to do your draft, because another point is Trevor Lawrence loves to spread the ball pretty wide, and he's got a lot of receivers, a lot of running backs, several tight ends. So I think Calvin Ridley is one that you can ride as a wide receiver one, definitely cheering for Ingram to be a tight end one, but something to watch as you think about certainly Kirk and then even Zay Jones in some deeper leagues or flex spots as well.
Awesome. So let's switch to the defensive side of the ball. The starters did pretty good job. Now they got bailed out a little bit on the first drive with a snap that went over to his head, resulting in about a 20-yard loss, which immediately ended their drive after a really nice opening play to Tyreek Hill for about 30 yards as he was wide open somehow. But thinking about it from a positive perspective, what stood out to you guys from a defensive perspective?
There was one person that really stood out to me, and it's a person that I didn't think I'd be talking about, Trey Herndon had an amazing play in the red zone, doing a touchdown saving defense. It was really good. He obviously is feeling the pressure from Gregory Jr., breathing down his neck, trying to get that starting nickel position. So I like that there's competition there, and Trey needs to know that you need to perform to stay as a starter on this team. There's a lot of depth right now, which is mind-boggling to say about the Jaguars. I mean, when's the last time you ever said the Jaguars had depth? I don't think I've ever said it, but people are probably playing the 90s. Now, maybe the 90s, yeah. But yeah, people are finally playing to keep their position, because if Trey Herndon messes up, Junior's right in there. So he's going to have to perform, and I liked what I saw in this game.
Let's give a shout out to a guy that we have all loved and been really high on, stepping up yet again. Maybe I would say, to me, he's been the defensive MVP for the preseason, and that's our rookie outside linebacker, Yasser Abdullah, recording an interception, and was great to see that. Great to see all of his teammates cheer him on and celebrate. He's had a very great preseason, and I am super excited to see what he's going to do in the regular season.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
He is the guy that you wanted Chaisson to be. He drops in the flats, makes the interception, looks very athletic, has already gotten to the quarterback. It looks fantastic being able to rush the quarterback and covers the edge. He's looked great so far this preseason. I'm sure we will be seeing him get some real snaps in the coming weeks as well. From a negative perspective, is there anything negative that stood out to you, or at least some concerns that you saw on defense?
Yeah, we gave up a couple wide open plays. JT, you mentioned that Hill play, and I think it'll be interesting to watch, because the Miami Dolphins finished right around the same spot as the Jaguars last year. Many people project them to be a step above next year, as well as a lot of people are saying about the Jaguars too. And even though Waddle wasn't on the field, you can definitely see this Dolphins team has a lot of speed. And I felt like our first team defense was a step slow. And so that's something that I want to see us improve and get right and get better as we get into week one here in 10 days.
Yeah. Speaking of things that they gave up, they had that big run that they gave up around the first or second quarter, where he bounced it on the outside and was able to get all the way down to the inside the 10 on the sideline. We really need to shore up that outside run. Our inside run stops have been great. The defensive line up the middle, the linebackers filling the gaps. We've really kind of shut down running it in between the guards, but bouncing it outside, the outside linebackers need to perform a little better, keep that inside and not let him bounce it outside and gain that much yardage.
Yeah. I think for me, Joey, you made a comment a second ago that, like, hey, when was the last time we had depth? And that's certainly true of this team at a number of positions. I will say, though, on defense, we don't really have any true game breakers. There's not a lot of individuals that the offense is going to have to game plan around or is very scared of. I would say Tyson Campbell is the one guy that fits the bill. Josh Allen, to a certain extent, can too. And so what we really want to be able to see over the coming year or over the coming weeks is, can Cisco take that next step? Can Lloyd take that next step? Can Walker take that next step? There's guys that have the potential to hit a pretty high ceiling. And look, it's the preseason. You're not necessarily going to see it from everybody, but there's not a whole lot of top end talent, in my opinion, on this team, despite the fact that there doesn't feel like there's as many holes as there have been previously.
I agree with there maybe not be a top end talent at this moment that's proved it, but I do believe, as you said, that there are players out there right now that have that top potential with, as you just said, Cisco definitely looks like he could really be a safety that makes problems for the other team. Foye Luakon, if he can learn how to cover, which I really want to see this year, he could be a real problem, because he's obviously really good with the run as a tackling machine. And if he can cover too, I mean, he's going to be the full package. And then Hamilton, I think he's going to be a wrecking ball up the middle. And I think there's a lot of people who are going to take that step forward. And obviously, Trayvon Walker, too, has that potential.
Yeah, makes sense. And so, like, anything else to call out for this game? One quick shout out to McManus. He looks like a legit kicker. He's got a really long leg from his time in Denver. So I feel very comfortable anytime we're lining up from really about 55 and in, and even a little bit over 55, I feel like we have a better than a puncher's chance of making that. So love seeing the special teams that we got to see during the preseason. Anything else to call out during this game?
I mean, the only thing I would call out for the defense on this game and moving forward, and I talked about depth, is the lack of depth at edge. I think we need to go out and either pick someone up that's get waived or trade for someone. I really like the Eagles. Burnett, that they're looking to trade, he could be a really good fit here. I don't know what they want for him, but if it's reasonable, I think the Jags need to go after him because he's a really big body that can actually be an inside edge guy or an outside edge guy. And he could be that third string guy that comes in for about 25% of the snaps. And he could bring in 6 to 8 sacks, which Chaisson can't. And that's a lot to ask from a rookie. And yes, sir. So I think we have to go get someone else.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the two things to watch on defense are going to be, Joey, as you pointed out, pass rush. And then whether that's internally from our own team and our guys developing or grabbing someone in a trade. And then the second thing that is something to point out and shout out from our defense as well, and has been true throughout this preseason, has been the ability to get the offense to turn the ball over. And so we did have 2 interceptions. And so we want to see that continue with Eric Howlett also getting an interception in that game. And so that's going to be what I want to see our defense as we get into regular season football, football that counts. Let's get after the quarterback and let's make offenses turn the ball over. All right. Well, as we think about the defense, the offense, yesterday was a big day around the league. So all 32 NFL teams cut their active roster to 53 players, including the Jaguars. And so just a real quick positional breakdown for the Jaguars, and then going to open it up to you guys on what your thoughts are of who was maybe a surprise that made the team and who were a few surprises that did not make the Jaguars team. So at quarterback, we are bringing along 2 players, running back 4, tight end 3, wide receiver 7, offensive line 8 players, interior defensive line 6, outside linebackers 4, inside linebackers 5, cornerbacks 6, safety 5 players, and special teams 3 players. And so that rounds out our 53-man roster. This is the team that we're carrying into week 1 against the Colts next Sunday. So what do you guys think? What were some of the surprises to y'all?
Well, there was one number that certainly stood out to me, and that was quarterbacks 2. Joey, your boy, what's up?
I know. It pains me that we have to waive Nathan Rourke. I'm praying that he makes it through the waivers and we can get him on the practice squad and bring him on the team if we ever need him. But I have a bad feeling he's not going to make it through the waivers. I just saw yesterday that the Patriots waived both of their backup quarterbacks and only have 1 available. So that means that they are definitely going to go looking for a quarterback, and honestly, they'd be dumb not to pick him up. So it's going to be really hard to watch him on another team in another uniform.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Hearing the news, I originally thought I would be angry and upset, but just legitimately sad has been what I've been feeling. Of love the guy in just a few weeks, was fun, got the fans hyped and excited, some incredible highlight plays, made you excited to watch fourth quarter preseason football. And so, but also I think why I'm sad and not angry is because I understand we end up keeping an extra wide receiver, which I'm sure we'll talk about more in a minute, but there were some very difficult calls. And so I think that there's a lot of respect from the Jaguars coaching staff for Nathan Rourke. I think they hated to have to release him, but I think they felt that we needed more depth at other positions.
Yeah, Joey, you brought up some really good points about why is Nathan Rourke not our number two versus CJ Beathard. And I was thinking about that all week. And the thing that keeps coming back to me is Beathard is a safer pick. Beathard is a guy who you can plug and play, and you know you're going to get pretty much you're gonna get like a very average performance. You're not gonna get something horrible, but you're not gonna get something electric either. Nathan Rourke introduces a lot of volatility into what he could potentially be. He could have some really, really high highs and could be somebody that, like, hey, wow, actually this guy could absolutely ball out like we saw in the preseason. Or, you know what, maybe there's some things that he benefited from playing a vanilla defense and against second and third stringers. But if you actually put the lights on and everything else like that, there may be some lower lows. So that's the only reason why that I could really see why you keep Beathard is, okay, if Trevor does go down, is there somebody that we could plug in and hope the rest of the team is talented enough to continue to win, similar to what Chad Henne did when he went 99 yards against us in the playoffs, where, hey, look, Henne is not we know what he is. He's not the highest of high quarterback, but he is somebody who can get the ball in the hands of the other playmakers.
Yeah, but don't give that drive to Chad Henne that we gave him that touchdown. We should have picked him off, but we dropped the interception. We had a lot of bad plays. I mean, we handed it to him. But
that's true.
I totally understand.
I still have nightmares about that drive. That was painful.
I know. We served it on a platter to them because, I mean, Chad Henne was trying to give it to us. He was like, here, Jaguars, please take the ball back. And then we couldn't hold on to it. But the reason maybe I'm not also angry, Jack, you brought it up. They did something that I was very happy about. They went and got 7 wide receivers instead of the 6, and they brought Elijah Cooks back. Man, oh man, do I love Elijah Cooks, and so does, I think, everyone else. He was the highest rated wide receiver rookie that entire preseason. PFF had him at an 88 to 86 rating the entire preseason. He was the top 3 out of all rookies, and he was an undrafted guy. I went back and looked at, I did some draft analyzing of wide receivers, and he was on the 6th page all the way down and ranked at like a 60 out of 100. And yet somehow the Jags saw him, and he is lightning in a bottle, I think. He brings something to this team that we don't have, and that's height. He's 6'4". He's really quick. We can finally throw that jump ball in the end zone. I love that we kept him, and I think he's going to be really, really good for this team.
Yeah, I doubt we'll get to see him much this year, but certainly somebody to keep our eye on for the future. For those that don't know, he came from San Jose State. As Joey mentioned, he is a rookie. And so we'll probably get to see him a little bit on special teams. And you know what? Maybe there's an opportunity to backfill like a Zay Jones, for example, when his contract gets up. And is it, if you can get similar type of production from Elijah Cooks without having to pay him as much as you're paying Zay, then okay, that could really help when you are trying to structure Trevor's massive deal, which I'm sure will get done sometime in the next 12 months.
Yeah, and speaking of rookies, something that stuck out to me from this 53-man roster was the number of rookies that Trent Baalke selected in the draft that made the team, especially with so many late-round picks, some guys in the 5th, a lot in the 6th, a lot in the 7th, that you may not necessarily expect. You just kind of hope they make the team. And so out of those 13 guys that the Jaguars drafted in April of this past year, we saw 9 of them make the team, in a 10th in Ventrell Miller of almost certainly would have made the team except for a very sad Achilles injury. He stepped up in the last couple preseason games, and so have to give Trent Baalke a lot of credit to see 9 of these guys make the team. It's very impressive.
I doubted him at that draft, but it is a masterclass of a draft, honestly. Now that I look back and I've seen these guys play, Anton Harrison is playing really well at right tackle. He never even played it really in college. I think there was one game that he played right tackle for Oklahoma, but he saw it. He's playing really well. And he looks like a starter. He's going to be a monster. Britton Strange has graded really well this preseason. He's blocking well, catching the ball. It seems like a really good pick. Parker Washington, to watch him slide and us pick him up, and now people are wanting to trade for him. That's huge. He was a six-round pick, and people are wanting to trade for him. Tank Bigsby's obviously a huge pickup. Tyler Lacy, Yasser Adul. I mean, the list goes on and on of how many hits that he had this year. I mean, normally you have like, what, two, three hits maybe in a draft, and he's got nine potential big hits.
All right, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit, because again, we've played three preseason games and we're already crowning this as a masterclass roster build when none of these guys have technically recorded a single stat in the NFL yet. So we'll pump the brakes a little bit, but to your point, there is a lot of potential upside with these guys, which is certainly exciting to see.
I think you can push the accelerator a little bit. I got your back on this, Joey, of I think especially because the Jaguars drafted so late, which, hey, let's be real, that was very abnormal for the Jaguars not to be in the top 10. So, yes, to your point, JD, I don't know that you necessarily have any home runs, but to get a whole lot of singles and doubles and potentially a triple is going to be pretty incredible to see with some of these guys going fifth, sixth, even seventh round.
Yeah, I mean, one of the success stories, Cooper Hodges, who was late sixth, maybe early seventh round.
Yeah, early seventh.
And he makes the team and even makes the team while injured. That's how much they like him and what he has done as a backup for this team. Like, that's a huge hit. Seventh round, injured, and still makes the team. That's crazy.
Let's talk about this guy, because we've covered him a lot. And speaking of maybe the opposite of a hit, a big swing and a miss, but still sneaking his way onto the team. What are y'all's response to Chase on making the starting 53-man roster?
Well, he's a first-round pick, and you, Joey, and myself all had the exact same amount of tackles that he had this preseason, which was zero. So, huge red flags, but he's still on his rookie contract. You have to hope that there's something. I mean, he's at least played three seasons, so he should know what he's doing over some of these rookies. But extremely concerning, not altogether shocking. Like, I would not have been surprised either way. I think we even talked a little bit about the fact that he will most likely make the team just because of where he was drafted. But man, he has put absolutely nothing on film that gets you excited.
What a garbage trash bag player. I don't know what Doug sees in him, and I want to trust, and in Doug we trust. I believe it, but I'm starting to waver with this whole Chase on thing. What does he see? I listen to analysts, and I've put in questions to other shows, and the only answer they ever give me is, oh, he's such a good special teams player. But, I mean, all these players can really honestly play special teams. It's not that difficult of a thing, and to be the third string guy, the guy that's going to get quite a few snaps and be on the field, he's not just going to be on the field for special teams. He's going to be on this defense. He's the third guy. And we're not in the NFL anymore where people play every single snap. He's going to be on this field. And I think he's going to be a giant hole. There, people are going to take advantage of him. He gets swallowed up by offensive linemen. I mean, he might as well, I think he may be one of the best magicians I've ever seen, because he just disappears. The man is a magic show, and I can't stand that he's even on this team still.
That's great, Joey. I agree with all that. And again, I've said before, I missed on it. A couple months ago, I was saying this is a potential breakout guy. And I think there's no question, hopefully, that he's going to be the last guy off the bench in the defense. And I think we hate to see it, because whether it's Nathan Rourke or some of these other guys, definitely a wide receiver, not that I think you carry eight, but there were several guys that you hated to see cut. And so, yes, we have a lack of depth at outside linebacker. But you hate to see us take Chase on over some of these guys, especially Roark. That just hurts.
Yeah, and to watch free agent after free agent go and not get signed, and we passed up on a bunch of people in the draft, and we just praised how good he did in the draft. And granted, every pick that he had was good, but not to go after an outside linebacker when we had Chase on. And I wanted to believe what the coaches were saying at the beginning of the season. They were like, oh, he's having a great camp. He's doing a real good job. And I believe in one of our first episodes, I was like, he could be a big breakout guy. But no. I've watched this tape and I've seen it other seasons before. There's just nothing there.
Yeah. It's time to move to Abdullah. Abdullah needs to be our first man up off the bench. Obviously, you're going to have Trayvon Walker. You're going to have Josh Allen. And then to me, it's Abdullah is next. And Chase on is last off the bench. And speaking of moving on, we'll wrap up here. As you can tell, we are fired up for the Jaguars regular season football to kick off in 10 days. And wanted to let you know a little bit of what's ahead. This is going to be more of our regular frequency of uploading a new episode every week with giving you a reaction to the Jaguars' most recent game, giving you a preview of something ahead. And we're also going to drop from time to time some bonus episodes. And so here's something you can do just to make sure you catch every Jaguars episode, whether you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever. Go ahead and hit follow or subscribe, and that makes sure that anytime that we upload a new episode, you'll get a notification and you'll see that. And something we want to highlight is we're going to do a special episode that we'll upload this Sunday where it'll just be a real quick, hey, all hype for the Jaguars this year, kind of our season kickoff. And so if you can do us a huge favor, especially on that episode, we're going to pin it to our podcast. If you can listen through the whole thing and share it with some other Jaguars fans, share it with some friends, we want to help that blow up and just get more and more people on the Jaguars bandwagon, more and more people here on the Jag Bros as well. And so be on the lookout for that this Sunday. And then we are going to have another one previewing week one the following week as we kick off our season in Indianapolis. And so, again, we are 10 days away. Hope you're getting excited. We are fired up. And so we're going to close, as we always do.
New ball.